Alabama has an estimated 23 million acres of timberland. This is land that is growing or has the potential to grow trees that can be marketed, sold, and made into lumber or other wood-based products. 87% of timberland acres in Alabama are privately owned by non-industrial private landowners, many of whom are considered family forest landowners. These may be individuals, couples, families, estates, or trusts who are responsible for forest land decision-making on their property. For some, managing a family forest can be an overwhelming task, especially if they feel like they lack the knowledge and training to make informed choices. They may also have limited time and resources to make desired property improvements, or maybe they're working with family members who have different land management vision than they do. Any one of these factors can make a family forest landowner want to give up and do nothing, which is exactly what they should not do. Today, we will visit with a landowner who shares her experiences as she navigates the ins and outs of managing a small woodlot with her family. I'm Becky Barlow, and this is Forest Her. That is the estimated average size of a family forest in Alabama. That's about the size of 23 football fields, end zones included. The average family forest ownership in the United States is just over two times that, at about 65 acres. And while timberland is owned for many different reasons, in general, landowners in the southern United States are more likely to have inherited and live near their land than in other parts of the country. Southern U.S. family forest owners are also more likely to focus on timber management than their counterparts in other regions of the U.S. But one thing is consistent nationwide. Women are increasingly taking an active role in forest land decision making. In fact, the number of women who were the primary forest land decision makers increased from 11% to 22% between the years of 2006 and 2013.
I'm Lynn Dickinson, and this is our family property. I'm not entirely sure where our property lines are. I have a good idea. Probably about 25 or 30 yards over that way, there's a metal peg, and that's where our property starts, and it goes back through the wetland area. I know part of this side of the road is ours, but I don't know how far back it goes. And then there is an old pulpwood road over here.
Lynn and her husband, Paul, help manage 15 acres of their family's forest land in East Alabama. And as Lynn described the property, you might have noticed that she's uncertain about where the property lines are. But she is working on figuring that out, which is good, because until landowners know what they own and have boundary lines well established, it's difficult to do other management activities. And landowners who don't have well-established property lines are more susceptible to land loss due to adverse possession. That is, someone claiming to own another person's property either as an honest mistake or knowingly in a dishonest attempt to claim title to the land. She and Paul are also trying to figure out what they should do to improve their property. So I ask her if their family had discussed or written down any goals for their forest.
No, we haven't written anything down. Paul never really came down here and did much. It still belongs to his dad. When his dad passes, it'll go to Paul. But his brother used to take care of this. He died in 2013, 2014. And from that point until about 2017, 2018, nobody came down here and did anything. And the only thing his brother did was hunt down here. But he kept, like this road, he kept cleared. Everything was cleared out when limbs fell, like this right here, he would take care of it. It got neglected until we started coming down here. And we haven't done much, mostly just because we didn't know where to start. It's overwhelming. You know, when you stand back and look at it and try to figure out what you want to do and how you want to do it, trying to find that starting point is difficult. Long-term objectives. I just want it to be healthy. I don't know what we actually want to use it for yet. I think we're still trying to figure that out. I know it'll either be recreational or residential. I'm leaning more towards the recreational side of it, just simply because of what it takes to get down here. In order to make this a home site, we'd have to do a lot of work on the roads first. And right now, they're not even wide enough to get the equipment down here to lay a foundation for a house or anything else. So we're also kind of leery of putting too much work and effort into it until his name is added to that deed. Because he talked about putting a camper down here and, well, we'll get a septic tank put in. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. If your dad wants to add your name to the deed, not sign it over to you, just add your name to it, I got no problem with it. But until that's done, I don't want to put a lot of time and effort and money into it, because it may not end up going to us when all is said and done. You never know. Until we know for sure, we're not going to do a whole lot. I don't mind doing some thinning and things like that. I'm not putting a septic tank in for a camper.
Yeah.
No. I'm not doing that. Those are the kinds of things we disagree on.
Conversations with family members about the future of your family's forest land can be difficult, especially if there are multiple people involved. But these conversations are an important part of the forest management planning process. Talking about goals and objectives helps your family determine what forest management activities are most important, and it also helps you think about how the work will get done. Once everyone's on the same page, document the plan in writing. Then follow through proper legal channels to leave nothing to chance and help avoid hard feelings down the road. With that taken care of, families can enjoy doing the things they love on the land, like wildlife watching and other forms of recreation, as they put their plan into practice.
But we do have a lot of deer and turkey, woodpecker, owls. There's a couple of hawks that live down in here. I see them flying around every once in a while. One of them's huge. Tons of raccoons. I was down here one time by myself, and I was sitting in that tree stand, and I had an apple, and I had eaten it, and I thought, well, I'm just going to throw the core of it out into the field. You can't throw from up there. You can't. There's a tree behind you. So it landed, you know, very close to where I was sitting. And later on that evening, a raccoon came down this road, and I watched him, and he stopped and sat up, and he could smell that apple. And there were logs over there then, and it was between those logs. And he went over and got it and sat right there and ate that apple core. And I thought, oh, how cute. He's so adorable. And then he climbed up the tree right next to me and stared at me. I thought, okay, I don't like you anymore. He was just above my head, and he was only about 6 feet from me. And he just sat there and looked at me, and I thought, please go away. He finally went further up the tree and got around on the other side of it. And I was like, okay, I feel better now. But I was like, are you going to jump on my head? What is going to happen here? Because I'm going to have a heart attack. We've tried to get people to come out here and plow this up for us so that we can plant before deer season, because we use this as a food plot during the winter, and it's too small. Nobody wants to come out here and do that. It's too much effort to get a tractor out here for such a small piece of land to be plowed. And I had a couple of different people that I talked to about it last year. One of them actually came out and did look at it and said he was going to do it, but before he hit the paved road, he called me back and said, you know what, it's just really not worth my effort. So I think it's more feasible for us to find a good used tractor and buy it, and that way we can take care of it ourselves, because I don't really think we're ever going to find anyone that does that for a living that's going to be willing to come and do such a small piece of land. And that's one of the biggest challenges, is to get people out here. The man that came and cleared this for us was somebody my husband worked with. I think that's the only reason he did it. You know, it was more as a favor. When you just own a small piece, they don't want to be bothered with it. It's not worth their time.
Like Glenn and Paul, family forest landowners may decide to do some of the work on their forests themselves, because finding a contractor to work on tracts smaller than 20 acres can sometimes be difficult. And while things like clearing food plots, maintaining forest roads, and basic forest inventories can be done by landowners with the right equipment, larger jobs like timber harvest, site preparation work, and tree planting may be more than a landowner wants to take on.
Probably why we started with that little piece that we had cleared up front there, because we knew we wanted to do that. And we had somebody that was willing to come out and do it. So I wish I had stayed out here when he was doing it, because we just told him, use your best judgment. And we left. He took out more than I wanted him to, but it's okay. It gave us a nice place to camp, or maybe build a little pavilion or something at some point. So it'll be all right. But yeah, he took out a little more than what I wanted him to. I'm not sure how much Paul wanted him to take out, but I think we were both a little shocked when we came back down and saw how much was gone.
As Lynn and her husband discovered, it is important that expectations are clearly outlined with the contractor before any work is done. Written contracts between the landowner and the contractor can ensure that everyone understands what will be done, when it will be done, and how much it will cost. Also, it is important that you have good lines of communication with the contractor while work is ongoing. And from time to time, be on site when the work is being completed so you can address any concerns as they arise.
Yeah, I think what I need to do is some research to figure out what should be or what was at one time growing down here. And then see what we can do to try to encourage that. But really, we got to open it up a little bit, because in other words, nothing's going to, as far as grasses, nothing's going to grow. I mean, it doesn't. It's June and you see how much we've got. It's almost all hardwoods, a pine tree here and there. And you can see how many of them are so little. It gets kind of thick. I kind of feel like we need to thin it a little bit to open it up. But that's what I wanted to do to this open area right here. But instead we had that man just come in and knock things down. If we do anything back through this area, I just want to thin it. I don't want a bulldozer to come back here and knock things down. I just want to open it up a little bit, because it gets really dark back in here. The canopy's real full, especially in the summertime. There's almost no grass growing. There's nothing. It's just ground for the most part, especially when you get back in there to where it gets a little bit thicker. So I would like to eventually thin it, if for no other reason than just to open it up a little bit.
So I think Lynn has the right idea. Do some research and figure out what species are best suited to your forest, determine what you have currently growing on the site, and then start with small, manageable projects that will help you meet your goals. And as you go along, document what you do and how it turns out. This can be in writing or even with photographs. This gives you a way to see how far you've come and give you hope and inspiration for the future of your other land management projects.
I got a list of native grasses, and I want to kind of see if I can't plant some of them out here, because I'd kind of like to try to restore it with some of what should be out here. I don't know how much of this. I need to research that, because I don't know what should be growing here as opposed to what actually is growing here. Yeah, I mean, I know we'll never get it back to what it once was. I mean, if we could encourage some of the trees that should be growing here to grow here, then I think that would be a step in the right direction. And I think that's another one of the challenges we're going to face, is trying to get someone down here with the equipment to do it that's willing to put in the time and the effort. We could come down with a chainsaw and cut some of these small trees out ourselves, but to really thin it out the way it probably needs to be, because the canopy's thick back here, and it's strange, because like during hunting season, I sit in that little shack over there a lot, and it's so interesting to me because this is the west over here, and it gets so dark on this side before it does on this side, and it's just because of all the tree cover. You know, I'll still be able to see into this open field, but if I turn around and look the other way, I can't see anything, and it's just because of the tree cover. That's why there's not much growing back here either. It's just mostly leaf litter everywhere.
It is easy to become overwhelmed. You could probably hear it in Lynn's voice. One thing I suggested to her was that they take a small area, an acre, or even a tenth of an acre, and make improvements, then build on that over time as they start to see results. This mini management project approach is a good way to try new management ideas before you implement them across an entire forest, to see if they will work and give you the results you hope for. No matter what improvements you decide to make, always keep in mind your goals and why you love the land.
I love it down here. It's so peaceful. Sometimes when I just need to de-stress, I just come down here and just sit. Chill out for a while and just let the world go away.
If you, like Lynn and her family, want to improve your forest but are unsure how to start, you're in good company. But know that you don't have to do it all on your own. There's information on boundary lines, wildlife management, and writing forest management plans at the resources link found on the Forest Her podcast page. And you can contact one of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System forestry, wildlife, and natural resource agents working in your county who are always happy to help. You can also check the Alabama Cooperative Extension System calendar for upcoming online workshops or in-person workshops that are in your area. Thanks for listening. We hope that you will join us for future Forest Her podcasts. And in the meantime, remember, find your voice, be bold, and do good things for your land.